Welcome to Voices of Michigan Education on News Talk 760 WJR, a discussion of issues and events affecting your children and the future of Michigan education. Voices of Michigan Education is brought to you by the Michigan Education Association.
I'm Carrie Birmingham. From bookworms to those reluctant to turn the pages, on this show, we are talking about reading. It's one of the most important and sometimes challenging skills our students must tackle. But the challenge for teachers and parents is, how do we take them from reading because they have to reading because they love to? On today's show, we'll have resources for struggling readers, including a look at two ideas from the past that have been reinvented for today's students. We'll also take a look at what to do to keep older readers engaged, and a special visit from acclaimed children's author Patricia Polacco, how her own struggle with learning to read shaped how she approaches students today. It's all next on Voices of Michigan Education on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Voices of Michigan Education on News Talk 760 WJR.
I'm Carrie Birmingham. Today we're talking about all things reading, from resources for struggling readers to ways to engage older readers and keep them interested in possibly trying some new genres. Joining me now are Nora Gaglio, a first grade teacher from Port Huron, from Garfield Elementary in Port Huron, also a former reading recovery teacher as well. And I also have Connie Boylan, who is a media center paraprofessional from Traverse City, who has worked for years also on the NEA board for Read Across America. Thank you so much for joining me. Nora, let me start with you. First grade is such a critical year for learning to read. What do you do to get those kids up and going in terms of learning just the basics?
First grade is crucial. It is crucial. You must start with getting them enjoying reading and listening to reading before anything else. They have to love books. I feel that's my job. Getting them into books that they're interested in, and the most important thing is getting books that are at their level so that they don't get frustrated. Once a child gets frustrated with reading, then it's hard to get them back into enjoying it. So
what tips would you have for parents? What is the number one thing parents need to do to prepare their children to enter first grade and enter your classroom?
To begin first grade, it is crucial for the children to know their sounds of their letters, and then it's my job to help them blend those sounds together into words. I think it's crucial for parents to get them into books. Start reading from infancy on. Get them into books. Once they're reading books, make sure that they don't get frustrated. If they're stuck on a word, give them that word. Don't let them sit and struggle sounding it out. I think that's the biggest mistake that parents make, is letting them go on and struggle with sounding out a word. Just give it to them.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you deal with a wide range of skills. There are probably kids who are just at the very beginning, and then kids who have moved on and are reading quite well.
Absolutely. We get children starting without any sounds at all to children. I have children in my classroom reading at a fifth grade level right now, and some that are still struggling. So it's a difficult task as a first grade teacher.
Mm-hmm. Connie, you, talking of fifth grade, or speaking of fifth grade, you deal with kids across the gamut. What do we do to keep those older readers engaged, and maybe some that were struggling in the beginning and now they're really starting to take off?
Well, it's really important that you display that you love the book you're reading. I never would do a book talk or read a book that I hadn't already read and I really loved it. It did something, it clicked in me that made me want to read it, because I think they see that. And so what I do is we go through the different genres as part of what we do in our library, but I always pull some different my favorite authors out. And there's a thing called Skype now that you can use, where you can go on and you can do interactive conversations with authors, illustrators. That's a very good tool, because the kids like that, being able to see them. And when a new book comes out that I want to do book talks on, quite often you can go online and you can get a clip of the author talking about how they wrote the book, if they had a struggle writing the book. Kate DiCamillo, who just did Because of Winn-Dixie, and her new book is The Magician's Elephant. She did a really great interview. With that, she came on, she talked about the struggle, and then she read the first chapter, and then I took up and I started reading the book after that. And then on my website, I have tons of authors. I have their web pages and illustrators for the kids to go to and find out more about that person. And quite often, that kind of turns them on to wanting to read those books, and they read about the different the different genres. My favorite is fantasy, so I get them turned on to that, and I think that's really an important thing to do. And then we do book talks. Book talks are huge. And then when we're all done, I usually have maybe like 10 or 20 that I do. We do the book talks, and then we raffle them off. They have to bid on the book, so who gets to be the first person? And their job is they have to do a little mini blurb and come back the next time and tell why they like the book. It's very effective. The kids really love it. And it's even the struggling readers. And I think, there are so many good books out there now for children at that level, where they're in the past there was not great literature for them. There's a lot of good series that they like, but it's important. You want to try to get them away from getting stuck in that rut. They get in that series rut, so.
Mm-hmm. And there are incentives. Of course, we're coming up on March, which is reading month, and there are always incentives at every school for kids to read, whether it's something their principal does or their teacher does, or they set some sort of goal. We've got an incentive, too, in the Michigan Education Association. Can you tell me about that?
Yes, it's called Michigan Reads, and it's our first year out on it, and it's a wonderful program, and it's amazing that being our maiden voyage on this, so to speak, we've had over a thousand students have taken part in it, and we're approaching 10,000 books have been read. And all a child has to do is read 5 books, and their parent, librarian, media specialist, teacher, any adult goes online to michiganreads.com, and there's a form they download. They enter the name of the books in there and submit it. And then they get a voucher from the Pistons. It's in conjunction with the Detroit Pistons, that for a free ticket for the child to attend one of the ball games. And the season goes clear to the end of April, so there's plenty of time left to still do it. And they've almost done 10,000 books have been turned in so far. So that's pretty amazing for the first time out. And we're pretty excited and hope to see it grow every year from this on. And it's a good thing. That's a good thing for the older children, because when you do the Read Across America, which is phenomenal. But that's the kids will say, that's really kind of for little kids. So this is a way to get your fifth grader on all up through high school to be, and it's a family issue too. You go with your parent to do something. So it's a good deal, I think.
Mm-hmm. Nora, do the incentives work with the younger kids too? Connie talked about Read Across America and the kind of things we do to get kids going.
Absolutely. At our school, we give them a challenge, and our principal dresses up as something, and it's always a surprise every year. Last year, he dressed up as a gorilla. It was Go Bananas for Books, and they're challenged on pages read. And it really is an incentive. It's a big deal all through March at our school.
Well, coming up, we actually have a special treat. Connie, you talked about an author struggling to write a chapter. We are going to play part of a conversation with an author who struggled to learn to read. And I'd like you guys to listen to that, too, and let me know what kinds of similarities you see with students in your classroom and what you would do to help. That's coming up next on Voices of Michigan Education on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Voices of Michigan Education, brought to you by the Michigan Education Association on News Talk 760 WJR.
I'm Carrie Birmingham. I'd like to play now part of a conversation that we were fortunate enough to have with acclaimed Michigan children's author Patricia Polacco, where she talks about her struggle to learn to read and the teacher who helped her reach her aha moment.
I didn't learn to read till I was 14. I have dyslexia, dysnumeria, dysgraphia, and failure of sensory integration. So within my skin, of course, as a kid, I had no idea what was the matter. I just pegged myself as somebody who was dumb and hopeless and never going to make it and just always be behind. And it's a teacher who saved my life, a teacher who stepped into my life, and he suspected something literally organic was wrong. He kept me after school one day, had me wash blackboards with him. But he asked me to make letters and numbers in a very large motion on the board. This is where the code showed up. This is where he realized something was wrong. Out of his own pocket, he paid for a specialist to work with me. And we did balance boards, we did colored acetates, I think. But that help and realizing that I wasn't alone and that I wasn't in this terrible blackness, that he just opened all the doors of my life, and the rest has pretty much been history. I love to go to schools and talk to young people who are struggling, because I've been in there. I've been in their feet. I know what this feels like, and they feel very defeated and like nothing good is ever going to happen to them. So I think it's valuable for them to hear, oh, yes, it will. Things happen that are wonderful. You're not dumb, because that's what they think. Number one, they're dumb. that you have something that has a name, and it's just the same as if you were a diabetic or if you had a bad heart or whatever. I mean, this is nothing to be ashamed of, but you're going to have to kind of work around it and listen to the teachers, because they have these wonderful ways of teaching you. Their hearts break for young people like this, and they try every method they know to help them. In my case, I wouldn't let my teachers in. I didn't want them to know how stupid I was. And once I trusted them, then the world was open to me. Mr. Falker and Miss Plessy, they were standing in the room with me, and I remember the aha moment. And yes, we all cried. We all cried. Because people that don't know about learning disabilities, you can't say to a child, oh, just get over it. It's literally, there's a brick wall that they've got to scale. I think the word I heard most often was lazy. And I would have crossed water. I would have walked across water to do what they wanted. But I truly could not. I was incapable of it. I don't even like to think of where I'd be if I hadn't had those teachers. I mean, if George Falker hadn't interceded that day, I can say this to you, none of my books would exist, my two children would not exist, and I wouldn't be sitting here.
That is acclaimed Michigan author Patricia Polacco talking about how the world of reading was opened up for her. And joining me, as before, Nora Gaglio, a first-grade teacher from Garfield Elementary in Port Huron, and also Connie Boylan from Traverse City, media specialist in Traverse City. One of the things that she talks about is the pain that she went through, but then the joy that came for both her and for her teachers. Nora, you must see that with first graders.
I see that almost on a daily basis. I have a struggling reader right now in my classroom, and he opened up a book with me and saw that there were several words on each page, and he just looked at me with the most frightened look on his face and said, I can't do this. I said, you just try. Just read all the words that you know on that page, and I'll give you the ones that you don't. He read the first two pages without any help, and he looked up at me with the biggest smile, and I have goosebumps at this moment just thinking about it. He was so excited, and when he realized that he indeed was reading this book with all of these words on the page, that immediately frightened him when he opened up the book. Mm-hmm. And it's just exciting. I get those on a daily basis.
And we kind of get choked up even talking about this. Connie, talk to me about what it's like for you to hear an author, a fabulous award-winning author, talk about that struggle for 14 years.
She was amazing, and she is somebody I share with all my... I do a Patricia Polacco unit because of her work as an illustrator and an author is amazing, and the children love her. And I always talk about the fact that she was 14 before she could read, and you can see the children who have the disabilities. You can just see this little twinkle in their eye, and they go, and she wrote that book, she did it. So, you know, they realize that somebody else had that struggle, and they made something of themselves. They were able to overcome it, and I think she's a very good example. And I use her every year. We do a whole unit on her because she's from Michigan, obviously, but to talk about her struggle. And children will, you know, the children who have those same struggles, you'll see them. They will go get her books. They will just gravitate towards them. And then we talk about other famous people who have dyslexia, as she did, or other learning disabilities, and to show them that, you know, everybody can overcome that. It needs a lot of hard work.
And what's fabulous about her story, I think, is that she went from a struggling reader to someone who loves literature. And she instills that in all of us. I enjoy reading her books with my children because her books are so fabulous and they're filled with characters that you can love and engage in. How do we do that? How do we get kids from I have to learn to read and I read because I have to I read because I love it?
You have to love it first. I think as a teacher, anyone trained to teach reading can teach reading, but not everyone can teach a child to love to read. And I take that as my job. I want them to come into first grade and leave loving books and loving to read, no matter what level they're reading at, no matter how much they struggle. I want them to leave loving books. And I think if I can accomplish that, then most children will go on loving to read literature and then hopefully they'll love to write it also.
And you probably see the same thing then, Connie.
Absolutely. I think that is my job, is to teach children to love to read. And we talk about recreational reading and why it's important to do recreational reading. You know, that is, it's your time to escape and have a good time and do something that's good for yourself, is what we talk about. And the children, and they have to see you love that book when you're reading it to them. they have to, you know, we use voices, you know, the dialect and things. That's important because that makes the story more interesting to them. And when they can see that you've really lost yourself in that book, then they want to pick that same book up and read it. So,
all right, we are talking to Connie Boylan, media support paraprofessional from Traverse City, and also Nora Gaglio, a first grade teacher from Garfield Elementary in Port Huron, and we're talking about instilling that love of reading in our children. We heard a few moments ago from Patricia Polacco, who gave what to me is a very emotional testimony to teachers and to the fact that it was a teacher and a group of teachers really who reached out and gave that to her. That's probably a part of your job you take very seriously.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have been lucky enough to hear Patricia Polacco and have her come to our school and speak to the teachers. And it is, you know, it's huge to know that we have such an impact on children. And
one of the things, Connie, that she talked to me about as well is the importance of reading to children. And she's not just talking about first grade students or kindergarten students or third grade students. She's talking through high school, how much she loved to hear her high school teachers read to her in the classroom and have her parents and grandparents read to her. Is that something that you advocate down the line?
Oh, absolutely. I read every week to all my students. You know, we read novels, we read picture books, and you don't stop reading picture books to children because they're in the fourth, fifth, or even in junior high. They use them to teach curriculum all the time. And it is, and our librarians that we have, our media specialists at our secondary sites, they'll say that when they sit down and read to the children at the secondary levels, they're thrilled because somebody is reading to them again. And I love to be read to as an adult. So, I mean, why would you think a child would not? And so many times you'll hear some of the administrators will say, well, you know, I don't think it's necessary to read to them once they get to the fifth grade. And I say, well, whatever would give you that idea? Because it is. I think they actually maybe need it more than anything at that time because it is one of the few downtimes they have. They can sit back and relax. And they tell me the library is a safe place to come. They love to come to the library. It's warm and fuzzy. Those are the words they'll use. And they love to come. And they can, you know, find their little nook. They don't have to, you know, they find a little hole and sometimes they crawl under the tables and read. And my older kids do that. They love to be read to.
My favorite book would have to be Into the Wild because it's kind of funny and I don't know what's going to happen next. It's just like, bing, surprise.
You can hear the entire interview, my whole conversation with Patricia Polacco, on our website at www.mea.org/radio. And coming up, we're going to talk about a new resource for struggling readers. Do you remember the Electric Company? Many of us grew up watching the Electric Company, learning phonics and sight words. Well, the Electric Company is all new. It's a little different, but it's reaching out to today's students. We'll talk to them next on The Voices of Michigan Education on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Voices of Michigan Education on News Talk 760 WJR.
I'm Carrie Birmingham. Do you remember the Electric Company? Many of us in the 70s grew up with that award-winning show from Sesame Workshop. We learned phonics, we learned sight words, we learned songs. It was a big part of childhood for a lot of people and a big part of learning to read, which is our topic today, reading. Well, the Electric Company is back and all new. And joining me now is Director of Education Scott Cameron to talk to me about what is different about the Electric Company?
Well, for one thing, you know, we've had to update the music a little bit because the music has changed a bit from the 70s. But from an educational perspective, the biggest change is that we've learned in the past 30-odd years that in addition to phonics and in addition to sight words and reading strategies, kids really need vocabulary because there's a huge gap in vocabulary knowledge among 6 to 8 year olds, which is our target audience. 6 to 8 year olds from disadvantaged families come in to first and second grade with a much lower vocabulary than their middle class or upper middle class peers. And even kids from very language heavy households sometimes just need that boost with vocabulary. And unless they know what words mean, they're not going to really be able to figure out how to read a sentence or a paragraph.
Well, and we have seen this here in the news in the Metro Detroit area where the reading skills that kids are lacking are affecting their subject matter in math in all sorts of testing that they're going through. Talk to me about what you call the crisis of literacy in this country. Are you seeing large numbers of 6 to 9 year olds who just don't have those skills?
Yeah, we are. It's really astounding. We back in the 70s, in 1971, when the original Electra Company launched, there was a huge literacy crisis. And the sad thing is that since 1971, as a nation, we haven't figured out how to tackle that problem and solve it. And so right now, over a third of American fourth graders are not at reading level. And when you hit fourth grade, you no longer are learning how to read in school. You really have to read in order to learn. And so if you don't have the skills to make sense of a paragraph or a page by the time you hit fourth grade, you're not going to be able to understand the social studies text or even the math texts, science, obviously. So it spills over into every single subject. And we're finding that really, second grade is the point where we have to grab kids and help them. And if they leave second grade and they still can't read, they still can't decode words, sound things out, and make meaning out of connected text, then they're going to be really at a disadvantage in third grade, and we probably will never be able to kind of get them back statistically.
And one of the things I love about your show, and I have seen the show, is that you really do grab kids. Everything from the graphics to the colors to the music, it's definitely designed to engage kids. But this is kind of a multimedia thing for you, too. It's not just the show.
It is. That's one of the bigger differences, too, between the original. Back in the 70s, when I was a kid watching the Electra Company, my teacher rolled in a TV at 12:30 in the afternoon, because this was before the days of VCRs, and you had to just roll in the TV and plan your day around the Electra Company. And I think about 35% of classrooms in the country were using the Electra Company in class as a way to teach reading. Now, of course, we have the internet, which we didn't have back then, and we find that a lot of kids, even ages 6 to 8, are online just as much as they are on television, and they're watching full episodes online, or they're watching clips, and they're also on portable devices. They're on their parents', you know, iPods or cell phones even, and so we tried to design something that would hit kids from all different angles. We're a nonprofit, and so the idea is just to take the money from the government that we've been given to support this program and really try and reach kids from all socioeconomic backgrounds. If they don't have access to the internet, we need to have stuff on public television and in after-school programs for them. If they are on their cell phone, we want to have stuff for them to use, not their own cell phone, but their parents. So multimedia is really, it's really the only way to capture kids' imaginations these days, for better or worse. And we did a lot of testing to figure out how far to kind of go into the multimedia world. And everything that we found in our testing around the country was that in order to really make this show the phenomenon that it needs to be to continue on and to continue reaching kids and helping them, we needed to have stuff from all the different media platforms.
Now, you talked about the research that you did and the study that you did. The entire program is sort of research-based, isn't it? I mean, it's fun, but there's some real learning that's going on there.
It definitely is, and that's my job. We pulled together a team of literacy experts from around the country, from Stanford and University of Texas and Michigan and Berkeley, and a lot of experts who've been working with kids for years, and we developed a curriculum with them. And then we went out in the field and we tested stuff, and we shot a kind of proof of concept video with our new idea of incorporating contemporary music, everything from rap and hip hop to country music, into this video environment rooted with narrative characters, because the original Electric Company was sketch comedy, just like Laugh-In'. But kids now are watching narratives. They're watching all the shows on Nickelodeon and Disney that have storylines and continuing characters. And so we tested that, and we went to about 8 locations around the country, rural and urban, and pulled all the information together after about 2.5 years, and then we created the new project.
Well, Scott, talk to me about what resources you have available also for parents and for teachers, because I know you're gearing this towards kids, but we all know many times they need to be guided by their parents and their teachers.
Absolutely. We have worked a lot with teachers around the country to figure out what are the kinds of resources that they need. And so in addition to having a website at pbskids.go, where there's a whole Electra Company website with clips from the show that are short form, phonics and punctuation clips, as well as vocabulary, those clips all live online. And there's a parents and educators section on the website that has over 80 downloadable PDFs that are activity sheets for kids. And there are also resources for parents and teachers that describe in depth these reading-related activities that they can do with individual kids or groups of kids. It's all designed to work in a classroom, in an after-school setting, in the home. And our website, of course, has a lot of games. There are these reading-based games that use the characters from the show to extend the learning. And so that also is something that we designed so that parents can work with their children if they want, or the children can work independently. But parents know that it's a PBS project, and it's all safe, and it's been researched, and we take the integrity of the child's life really seriously. So it's a safe space.
And it's a whole lot of fun for kids as well. What are you hoping kids take away from this?
Well, obviously, I hope that first, second, third graders walk away from an episode or from playing a game online or an activity and learn whatever the specific goal we're trying to teach is. Vocabulary, as I said, is a big one. Sounding out words, knowing what silent E is. So those specific educational goals are important. But I think the spirit of the program is really self-expression and communication. And when we traveled around the country to do research, I remember going to a school in Baltimore and sitting down with a third grader, and I asked him what his favorite show on television was, because we ask a lot of questions to get the child comfortable and to kind of know where he or she is coming from. And he just stared at me, and he knew the words because he could tell me what his, you know, he could tell me a lot about his life. And he finally said, "Nobody ever asks me about my favorites." And it broke my heart. And this was something that I found again and again in Carbondale, Illinois, and in Arkansas, all over the country. I was talking to kids and found that for a lot of children, they don't really have a chance to express what they're feeling inside. And reading and writing is obviously one way to connect to the world. And so self-expression is a big part of it. And music is one way for kids to really kind of come out of their shell in a safe way, because they can kind of hide behind the music but also express themselves through music. So making the connection between reading and writing and music is a big piece for me personally and for the project.
Hey, you guys!
That's the all-new Electric Company. It educated many children in the 1970s. It is back, all new, and on PBS. Coming up next, we have another old-fashioned idea that is new again that will help Michigan readers. That's coming up next on Voices of Michigan Education on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Voices of Michigan Education, brought to you by the Michigan Education Association on News Talk 760 WJR.
Well, I always get sucked into a book, and I always want to read more.
I get wrapped up in a book sometimes, and I can't close it again after I finish the chapter.
Welcome back to Voices of Michigan Education. I'm Carrie Birmingham. Today we're talking about all things reading, how to help struggling readers, how to keep readers engaged, and how to prevent that summer slide, because lots of kids, when they have a break, whether it's midwinter break or spring break or summer break, they tend to slide a little bit. And we've got a unique idea, perhaps an old-fashioned idea, but one that's new again now. Joining me is Carrie Farnham, a first-grade teacher, Lois Kelly, a kindergarten teacher, and Kaylee Miller, a first-grade teacher, all from Huron Valley Schools, all from Brooks Elementary School. And tell me about your project, because there may be some of our listeners who remember these from when they were children, but I don't think anybody's heard about this in a very long time.
Okay. We got together after going to a conference on summer reading loss and with Richard Ellington, and he talked about how kids take a slide in reading during the summer months, and as few as 10 books could keep them from making that slide. So we got together and decided that we're going to hand out book bags for every student in our building. And so that's the first year we did that. We arranged to have book bags from kindergarten through the second grade, and they self-selected books where they were just right for their reading levels.
And then you took it a step further, though.
Yeah, and we figured and we heard that the kids were flying through these books. They were eating them up. They were loving them. And then they didn't have any books left the rest of the summer to read. So we said, we need to get books in these kids' hands. And that's when Carrie came up with the idea for the bookmobile to drive around to certain stops and neighborhoods and visit kids and let them switch out their books that they were finished with and provide them with new books for the rest of the summer.
Now, Lois, you guys were like the ice cream man then in the summer. You're running around with books. What kind of reaction did you get from kids?
Oh, it was fabulous. The children loved it. The parents loved it. There was a set schedule, 10 stops every Wednesday night, July and August, and the kids knew exactly what time we'd be there, and they would come running with their book bags and get to pick out the new ones that they wanted, and the parents would come and talk to us too, and talk to us about books that they'd read the week before. In fact, we even started pulling books for the parents that to borrow because they were interested in having some books to read.
Yeah, they were talking about it. You should have a crate for the adults. We need a reading program also. And it was the benefit of it was that we were able to educate the parents too to help them select books for their child that were at the right reading level, not too high, you know, just right. So the reluctant readers really enjoyed that. They had the opportunity to select those books that they were interested in, not one that a teacher was saying you have to read. And they knew we'd be there. We would be asking questions, and we would be saying, oh, no, you know, let's choose a different book. And
how exciting for them, though, to have you come into their neighborhoods and, you know, almost into their homes with literature, which is so important.
Yeah, I think that was the big draw of it, too, was the teachers were driving by, and they were coming with the bookmobile. So I think that got a lot of the readers out, too, was just seeing and meeting their teachers. Like, I even met a lot of my new students driving through the neighborhood, and we recruited some students that summer, too.
So. We even had siblings. You know, my child isn't going to be entering kindergarten yet, but do you think you could fit them with bags of books that would be help them to get on the way of their literacy track? So we were able to do that as well.
And what kind of result did you get from this? When the kids came back to first grade, second grade, third grade, what kind of response?
It's truly been amazing. I was always so frustrated because at the end of the year, I'd tell the first grade teachers, oh, wait till you get my kindergartners next year. They are reading so well. Their levels are fabulous. You're going to be so impressed. And September would roll around and Carrie would say, yeah, well, they're doing okay, but not all that great. With the bookmobile program, with the kids reading regularly, they maintained the levels that I left them at, and some of them even grew beyond that. So it meant so much to us that our year's work hadn't gone down the drain, that they were still reading where they should have been reading.
Yeah, we were able to pick up where we left off rather than regain the ground.
Yeah, we used to take the first 2 months of school just to get them going again, and now they're just coming in ready, so it's been very positive.
How do you think it impacted not just their skills and their ability to read, but their love for reading? Because that's one of the important things we're talking about here today, not just teaching kids to read, but teaching kids to love to read and making them the lifelong readers that we hope they all become.
Oh, I think it's had a positive impact. Even during our bookmobile stops, I haven't read all the books that are on the bookmobile, and somebody would say, this is a great book. You know, I said, oh, would you recommend it? Who would you recommend it for? Well, I'm thinking of so-and-so. He really likes these kinds of books. You should tell him about it. So it got them interested in different authors, different genres. And even in our classrooms, we see kids that are able to self-select books that are interesting to them, and they're excited about shopping for these books. So I think it has had a positive effect.
Yeah, and it's just an exciting thing for them to be able to have their own bag of their own books that are just theirs, and they get to take home and spend time with those books and then come and talk to us about it and have those book conversations with us about it. It's really creative.
One of the hardest things for us to get started, though, was getting enough books. And we have had phenomenal community support. Started with Myers. They helped us with a talent show, and we've got a lot of funding for them. Walmart picked up after that, and they helped us out. We've got a Leo's Coney Island in White Lake that's been fabulous with donations. They gave kids ice cream cones when they read a certain number of books.
Oh, don't forget Kohl's.
And Kohl's. Oh, they've been great. They've been great. Yeah. They send people to help and give us money for books and things. And our principal, Steve Chizik, has just been great, you know, getting out there and drumming up the to get more support, to buy more books.
Well, and of course you need that support. Mm-hmm. Is it something that can be replicated somewhere else? I mean, we're looking for tips for teachers, for parents, for educators across the state.
Oh, sure.
Is this something that can be replicated?
Sure.
Definitely.
And we're willing to share ideas. We have another principal in the district that wants to do it. We'll hand over the plans. This is what you have to do. Yeah. It's a lot of work in the beginning, just acquiring those books. But our parent organization has been wonderful in supporting us. You know, Kohl's, we enlist them to help us distribute the books. We come in and literally lay out books all over the library, and Kohl's come in for a day. They come in for the day, and we go through every student, kindergarten through fourth grade in our building, and they help them choose the books that they want and write down all the titles for us. So it's doable. It's a lot of work in the beginning.
Yeah. All you need is a car and some cardboard boxes and some books.
We use an ice cream truck.
Yeah.
You need the music. Exactly. Yeah, you need the ice cream truck music. Yeah. The one thing that I think this would do too is perhaps prompt reluctant readers to kind of get into the game. Can any of you share a story with me about a student that you had that maybe wasn't really getting into it, and then the bookmobile came around and it made all the difference?
Yeah, we have two students in mind, especially two students that I know of, and very reluctant. Reading was not their cup of tea. And when they both realized we were coming into their neighborhoods, they would come running. I would actually stand on the street and say, "Oh, the bookmobile's here!" And they would come running. And one summer, this one came running with his hood on, and he had a hat on underneath the hood. Well, he was in the middle of getting his hair highlighted, but he had to come for the bookmobile. So yeah, I think we've made a difference. And another little boy, the same thing. He was there almost every single week to get books, and he was not a kid who liked to read. But now he does, and he's in my classroom this year, and he's striving for those chapter books. I'm almost there. So, yeah, definitely. It has impacted and made a difference for those reluctant readers. And that was our target.
It lets us be a positive influence on these children's lives, too, because they see, you know, we're giving up part of our summer to show up and to pass out the books, and they think that's really important.
Yep. Gives us a check-in. We get to check in with the kids over the summer, too, because we're kind of missing them.
Yeah. Well, it's that connection as well. Mm-hmm. It's that connection because when we had Patricia Polacco talking, author, earlier, she was talking about the connection with an adult, when an adult would read to her, the connection that made, and when an adult would reach out and share a book with her. And I think that's important. That's sort of our responsibility as adults to create that next generation.
Yeah, and it's all about what you value. And I think if kids see that you value reading enough to get out there once a week and meet them in their neighborhoods, I think that makes a statement for them.
One night, I asked my mom to read me a book, and I picked out a chapter book, and she read the whole thing. When she starts reading and the words just come out, it feels like I'm actually in the story.
To find out more about the Brooks Elementary Bookmobile program, or to hear the entire interview with Patricia Polacco, or to get links to the Electric Company, visit our website at www.mea.org/radio. We'll have all the resources you need there for you. You've been listening to Voices of Michigan Education on News Talk 760 WJR.